Today on the Cooligans, I am joined by my guest co-host, Christine Cooper of Attacking Third. We're talking Premier League. We're talking Arsenal. Things get a little hot and heavy for Arsenal for some reason. I do not know why. And we'll talk about all the problems with Chelsea.
We'll also hit on some WOSO, nothing but the hits with USL and NWSL.
Let's go. I just want to wish a happy belated birthday to Christine Cupo. Christine Cupo, how are you doing?
I'm great now. I mean, you welcomed to Leo the proper way.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, I don't pay attention to zodiac signs that much. What are Leos like? And is it anything of how you actually are as a person?
We are very loyal.
Okay.
We can be very showy too.
All right. Okay.
A little loud. We all have a token mane, which is accurate. So I'd say yes.
Okay. All right. So did you do anything fun for your birthday?
I did a bunch of fun stuff for my birthday.
Yeah, I was reaching out because I was asking you, I think, to do the show last week.
Yeah, you forgot my birthday. It's fine.
Which was, I did realize once I was like, I think what happens when you click on your Twitter name, the balloons come out. I'm like, oh no, I didn't say happy birthday.
You're like, ayo, you want to do a thing for me? 20 minutes later, happy birthday.
Happy birthday. I'm like, my bad.
Yeah, I had a kick around, which as we all know, I injured myself about a year ago.
Yes.
The day nearly, and I haven't really played. So one of my big asks of my dear friends was to just kick around a bit, and we did.
Lovely.
So that was fun. Lots of birthday cake, lots of ice cream, some dinners, the usual stuff when you're like an old person or whatever.
Okay. Well, yeah, you're recovering from an ACL tear, which is, it's not an injury you want to get when you're an older person.
I went like ACL, MCL, both menisci. So like, go hard or go home or whatever the saying is.
I mean, that the tackle you put on that guy, you need to kill them.
if I find him.
welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. Yes, Alexis is still away. He will be back on Thursday. But today we got of Attacking Third and the occasional morning footy appearance. Christine Cupo. Christine, thank you again for joining me today.
Special episode of the Coopigans.
The Coopogans is back. Yeah, I always love it. We should have a new logo, actually, whenever you do the show. My name is Christian Polanco. We are here, the Cooligans, on Yahoo Sports. Christine, that's the first time you're hearing that.
Yeah, this is my first Yahoo appearance.
Look at that. I mean, the octave that you were just able to hit was quite impressive.
Didn't even warm up.
So we have a lot to go over today because the Premier League came back. All the European leagues came back, really. Premier League, Serie A. We'll talk a little bit of Leagues Cup and all that stuff. And our new producer, Carter, is here as well. Everybody here has some connection to CBS. This is, and we've learned that the people at CBS are not happy about it. So it is what it is.
Traitor.
I don't know. I can't control who wants to work here. It's not my decision. But we're excited to do this. Okay. Let's start with the Premier League, everybody. So it is back, and for all your favorite clubs, before first kick, it's always the hope is already there. The predictions, I saw all the predictions. Everybody's like, "Oh, Arsenal gonna do it. This is the year. This is the year." But obviously, I'm the only one that was saying everything's gonna do it this year. Okay,
are the only one, literally the only one, and one of one.
And everybody's like, "Okay, we have there's a great mental institution that we could get you in right now if you just apply right now." But no, so the hope is always there. But I think after watching this first weekend of matches, it still feels like, okay, this is just an extension of the last season. Not too many surprises. Man City looking great against Chelsea. Arsenal looking great against Wolves. But I want to start with the Arsenal match because you are an Arsenal supporter, a huge gooner. And the game itself, I don't think there's much of a shock, but it's really, I think the two moments that were surprising to a lot of people. What's Mosquera's first name? Is it Jefferson? I don't know if it's Jefferson Mosquera.
That doesn't sound right? But maybe it
that
is.
I could be wrong. I don't remember what his first name was. But Mosquera, who came from FC Cincinnati.
Yes.
So always cool to see MLS players.
Yerson.
See, I say Jefferson, but it's Yerson. So he is making his, debut, right? Or first game in the Premier League for Wolves.
What a splash.
They did. It was a 2-0 loss. But the two moments, the first one is the choke against Kai Havertz. If we're looking at the image right now. But basically, both going for a ball. Kind of battling for it. A little bit of a scuffle, a little tussle.
It happens. You get a shirt pull, you get an arm wrap, sometimes you get an elbow. It's run of the mill footballing activity.
Exactly. But the choke, he's falling down on Kai Havertz and uses his neck to brace his fall, which is it's partly like irresponsible. It's partly mildly sexual. I'm like, this is like, it's getting a little hot and heavy.
Okay. Really unhinged. Like,
you got to make, what's the safe word? Ask for consent first. This is a little too intense. Because look, we've all been in situations where you are.
Are we still talking about the choking part or we moved on?
We're talking on the pitch, I promise, right? But we've all been in situations where you get into kind of a scrap or bump, or you're all both going for a ball, or you fall down and you're usually aware of where your limbs are going. To go specifically on.
That's not an error. That was intentional.
Yeah.
I've never accidentally fallen on someone's throat with my palm. Okay. And I mean, I have fouled people sometimes, allegedly, but it's been this. This is insane.
This is pretty wild. Yeah.
Because even messing around, if he were to have fallen the wrong way, you can easily crush someone's windpipe.
Yeah.
And we have a drastically different scenario that plays out.
Right.
For the absolute.
Yeah. This is not, it's not great. I mean, it doesn't, there was a little bit because. He also was not carded for this.
That's more insane.
He also got a push in before the choke. So you get a push and a choke.
Listen, a push I can let slide, but a choke or not, that's a red card.
A choke as well. I mean, after the play, he's like, hey, whoa, I was just trying to brace my fall.
Like, this is your first Prem match this season, and this is how you're starting the season? That's insane.
So speaking of things being a little hot and heavy, the second, Mosquera, again, he's trying to get Gabriel Jesus to, Jesus is putting his boot back on or adjusting his boot, and he's trying to get him back into play. It's the 88th minute of the game, and he does this. He puts his hand on Jesus' butt, but does it with enough force to, like, kind of, what is it called to when you put a finger? Goosing.
You know,
it sounded terrible.
I think I have to go. I left my oven on.
The fact that I didn't know it immediately made it sound way, way worse. But this is like a very silly, this is like a frat guy thing, like goosing somebody.
But also wildly inappropriate. This is legitimately sexually harassing someone.
And Jesus was furious.
Rightfully so.
But the fact that Mosquera got away with both of these, I'm like, what did he... Everybody's like, what did he learn at Major League Soccer? Why is he bringing this to
Yes. What was happening behind the scenes in MLS?
It was bro. It makes no real sense. And I get Mosquera's... Where is he from? Is he Colombian? Where is he from exactly? I don't know where, because I don't know who to blame. CONCACAF or CONMEBOL, okay? He's Colombian, okay?
CONMEBOL.
He's CONMEBOL. The CONMEBOL antics, he's bringing them from South America to England. It's irresponsible. Come on, bro. This can't be the look.
This is wild. For match day one, I'm like, this is like match week five activity at least.
You gotta
ease into the season.
Buy me a couple drinks first. This can't be a couple Lucozades or whatever they call it. Just crazy, bro. But so, you know, we can talk about who's going to win the Premier League. But this is more fascinating because I can't comprehend this kind of like behavior. The fact that he didn't get away with it.
I'm more concerned with the reffing. Like, how did this slide through? This is not like an insignificant little something. This is... on your radar, anyone with eyeballs is sitting with their jaw hanging open. Like, that really just happened?
Yeah, this is a... I mean, look, refereeing was, again, a big part of this whole... Kovacic, the non-handball call, which is like, all right, now in the Premier League, they are trying to... Basically, they changed the rules a little bit to basically, if two players are very close to each other and it's a... bang, bang, play, as they say. I mean, Mosquera, clearly, we saw that.
Was, in fact, a bang, bang, yeah.
But the fact that if the player is basically close to whatever, like, impact or whatever, and the ball hits...
Ricochets?
You know, even that's it, because okay. That's not what happened here. It literally, he was just very close, mm-hmm. both going for the ball. I forgot who it was that hit the ball up, but it hits it to his arm, and it clearly hits his arm, but because... they were so close in proximity, didn't call a handball. So it's just like year to year, they make these subtle changes of like, they did call it last year or last year meaning just a couple months ago and now they're not. So
yeah, I mean, it's obviously reffing is you're interpreting the spirit of the laws and obviously the slight deviations in what they do or don't consider. It's like, oh, is it intentional? Is like the first thing. Is it, you know, did it, you know, move the ball forward in play? Did it impact? Like, there's too many things at this point. I'm like, can we just go back to like a cut and dry, like handball is a handball?
Yeah, it's I don't know. It feels like the, I mean, this is
like
a bigger
conversation. Like unnatural position. Like the caveats to it, there's a lot.
It's hard.
Behind their back.
Oh, the players.
Which is wild because that was like the deviation from like, oh, I'm a defender who it likely is going to end up bopping up because, I mean, not to say that people do this, but if you want to just like chip a ball up into someone's hand because it's advantageous to do so,
sure, sure.
It removes the possibility of it by putting your hands behind
your back. Yeah, like in this particular play, it was the ball wasn't going towards the goal. Like he's like just trying to basically regain possession per se, mm-hmm. or like just try to sort of kick it away. And given that the ball is not going towards the goal, he's not trying to control it. Mm-hmm. He's just trying to get it away from Kovacic reaching it first. And yes, it hits his arm. Even in last year's rules, I'd be fine without it being called a handball because it's like there wasn't any possibility that the ball was going to go in or even get to a player who could have hit the ball in. You know what I mean? Mm. So there wasn't a chance for an assist. There wasn't really anything. Wasn't any kind of like... promising sort of play. He's just trying to get the ball away from Kovacic. So I could see the frustration. It's a bigger frustration for Chelsea fans because it's like the team is not good. I mean, they also have, look, they have a lot of new players. They have a 30 player roster, something like that. And this is another, you know, another part of the drama was that Raheem Sterling didn't play in this game. Wasn't even on the squad. And now all the conversation. When does the transfer window end, Carter? August 30th. So we have a couple more days. So it feels like the Raheem Sterling did put out a statement and his team saying like, to paraphrase, it's just like, yo, what's up? I thought we was good. And now we ain't. Well, yeah. This is a surprise to me. I don't want to be blindsided. And I think that's why Enzo Maresca, after the game, he was saying that it was just a technical decision, that there wasn't any... It's like, bro, come on.
I think when you're a player, irrespective of what's said to you, you're not playing, right? You're like, mm-hmm. this is noticeable, I'm not playing. And it doesn't matter what you say beyond.
But also, are there better players than Raheem Sterling on Chelsea? No,
no.
There's no way. That's like, I mean, I understand Raheem Sterling gets a lot of like flack or whatever. Yeah. They are not... several better players than Raheem Sterling on this team. I mean, he's not the same player that he was at City. I get that, but it's like kind of ridiculous to leave him off the squad entirely. Like it's clearly a statement being made to him that like, yo, you're gonna have to find another club. The problem with Chelsea is that all their players are on 9-year contracts.
Right.
He has 3 years
left.
They've
spent so much money on all of their players and transfers. It's insane.
So it's not easy for another club to take him.
Right. Like, it's hard to offload because how are you even offsetting those costs? Nobody's like, yeah, man, I'll give you an extra few billion. Clean that up. Fix your book.
Brutal. So, no. And then the other thing with Chelsea that was fun was the Erling Haaland. Erling Haaland scores a goal in this game. But he made it a mission to ruin Cucurella's life, because not only did he score against them, there was one moment where he bumped them off of the ball, and Cucurella's on the ground. I think he had like hamstring tightness or something, and Haaland just walks past them smiling, just like
listen, with the way that Cucurella had, you know, shaped everything. He did this summer, to himself.
This summer, he went off.
I appreciate the gamesmanship of it. Like, I literally live for this kind of stuff. Yeah, but you have to be really, really careful when you fire shots.
Yeah.
It's not going to hit you back.
Yeah, we were making fun of the song. I forgot how the song exactly went. I don't know the lyrics, but the...
I remember, like, Cucurella, Paella.
Hey, drinks Estrella, all the thing. But one of the... one of the verses, one of the lines in there, one of the bars, was about Haaland, about how he can, like, you know, defend Haaland or whatever. And what was great was that after the game, Erling Haaland, he has said, well, Cucurella is a funny man. Last season, he asked me for my shirt, and this summer, he sings a song about me. So he's like, bro, I heard that song you made. Well, he didn't make the song, but he's like, yo, he was singing it. You were singing it loudly at all the celebrations.
You're like, first you're a fan, then you're coming for me. Like, okay.
So what's all this about? So he's like, yo, why you switch? He's like, yo, keep that same energy. That's basically what he said. And Haaland, he was like, and I took that personally.
Right? Oh yeah. As I think anyone would, right? If you have the opportunity to just kind of like, oh, that?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember that, my God?
I mean, it's similar to, not to the same extent, but probably similar to, you know, when Enzo Fernandez is singing the song about the French players. Of course, for the rest of the Premier League season, when any French player is...
That is so much worse. It's so much worse. Like a million times worse.
But it's one of those things of like, yo, keep that same energy, all right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You're like, oh, you can't chirp and be, oh, I don't know, like... highly racist.
Yeah. You can't. I mean, look, if it's gonna be this, and this is like more of a friendly banter type of thing. But Cucurella
was more lighthearted. Much more. It's really, really nice to see it go back.
But Cucurella was like getting drunk at the celebrations and singing.
Oh no, he was like already several sheets away. There wasn't a getting drunk. He was drunk for like three straight days, and he's just singing his own song.
So, and I think from a player like Erling Haaland, who plays for Norway, who can't even qualify for an international competition. It's just a nightmare. They're like, you know, they're like, please, in Nations League, can we get the 14th place position to qualify for the Euro? Begging for just a better team around him to end up qualifying. So that's a little bit of like, of course, a bitterness, a player like this.
Oh, yeah.
Who should
have like a once in a lifetime generational talent.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have a very talented Spain squad. And I get it. But it's very funny when like you can kind of puff up your chest because your team's great.
Yeah.
And then when you go 1v1 and you want to call the guy out, like, I'm so sorry, but Cucurella, you are nowhere in the same orbit as Haaland.
It's also a very strange, Cucurella is a left back. There are very few times that he probably has to mark him, right? Specifically.
Yeah.
And then in this game, he gets absolutely bodied by him and he scores on him. It was just the worst case scenario for, you know, the people who made the song. Because this is the worst. This is not how they, the song says, this is not how it's supposed to go. Yeah. And that's exactly how it did. So, not too much of a shock here, given that Chelsea, they have a lot to figure out this season. Any other results that were surprising, really? I mean, look, Everton lost.
My team lost.
My team lost. I'm wearing this AC Milan shirt out of like, I couldn't even put the Everton shirt on today, you know, to celebrate the Premier League season starting. It was absurd. The performance, you know, I rarely try to let, you know, it upset me that much because I'm like, I know what I'm getting into. Okay.
Yeah, every year. You've been here.
Okay.
suffering is part of the plan.
Okay. You know, it's like, you know, a Catholic marriage and you don't believe in divorce. You know, you just, I'm stuck here. God says I have to do this.
This is my teachable moment. Only it lasts my whole life.
I know what I'm getting into every year, and I was more disappointed than that. I couldn't believe how bad Everton were, and you know, Ashley Young gets a red card. Ashley Young getting a red card is one of those things where you're like, he's still playing. You know what I mean? And he's getting red cards, which is so, which is crazy. So it's not. Too much to say. You know, shouts to Brighton did their thing at Goodison Park.
My condolences.
Right, thank you so much. I appreciate it. The Aston Villa, that was an entertaining game. They beat West Ham. And then Liverpool under their new manager, Arne Slot. The cool thing there was, like, obviously you expect them to beat Liverpool, but there was already I don't know the chant exactly, but there was already a Arne Slot chant. For which is like, yo, I mean, huge boots to fill for Jurgen Klopp. And then that's it. They're already making songs about you.
I think part of it is due to Klopp. Klopp did sing the song for him before he went out.
Okay.
It was a nice passing of the baton. I think that Klopp is, one, just a wonderful human, but he knew that his exit would automatically breed contempt for whomever replaced him. And I think that he wanted to usher in Slot to a very welcome fan base. And he knows how much the support of the fans really helped him over the years. So I think that's one of the last kindnesses Klopp was able
nice.
To show.
So it looks like Jurgen Klopp slotted him in perfectly. Let's go, everybody. What a great segment. Talking about the Premier League. It started great. Ended great. We're going to talk some Serie A next, so we'll be right back. Serie A. Let's do this because I'm. You know what? This year, I'm going to make a stronger commitment to Serie A. I mean, it's nearly impossible to do this job, the job that we do, and act like we know about every single league, right? It's there's too many. There's too many games on at the same time. So every season, I'm like, all right, I'm going to kind of dip my toe in here a little bit more so I can familiarize myself. You know, I've never really picked like a Serie A team. I figure, you know, there's two Americans playing on AC Milan.
Is that the allegiance now? Is that your rooting interest?
I know those guys. I know those two guys. So I'm gonna pay attention a little bit heavily. If there is a you know, maybe I don't know, there may be a moment or something that happens that triggers my actual like allegiance and fandom.
Okay.
But right now, I'm just here to enjoy.
It's a good team to start off with.
Okay.
They do a good job.
All right,
front office does a decent job.
You're a Juventina, right? See how much I know about Serie A? I knew that.
See, it's perfect. You already nailed it. You're good to go.
I'm already speaking fluent Italiano, right? But no, I'm going to make
bravo, ragazzo.
But given that you're here, I did watch the AC Milan game against Torino. And you watch and you're like, especially, was this at home for AC Milan? I don't remember. I think it was. Yes, it was at home.
At the San Siro.
So you expect like, oh, intimidating atmosphere. This is going to be great.
Oh, yeah. It's an electric atmosphere. I mean, even if you're a neutral.
Right.
Like, good place to go.
And then Torino's up 2-0. And you're like, okay, what's going on here? I know they have a new manager, but they still have Christian Pulisic. And, you know, and he had a spectacular season last year.
So yeah, he was absolutely a standout. He certainly left his mark on mm-hmm. Milan. Which is great because the fans adore him.
When you think of like, you know, when he went to Milan, you just like, or just think of going to Italy, you expect, oh, they're not going to really be nice to the American player.
No, I think that more broadly outside of our domestic game, there's always going to be the American tax on all players where it's like, oh, let's see if this guy can do anything. And yeah, it happens. The best of them, including Pulisic, but it's nice that they have embraced him.
Yeah, I think there's like a tide turning when it comes to how Italians view American players, American league. Because I went to Italy on my honeymoon and I was wearing like my NYCFC jersey around. And I can't even tell you how many times I got stopped where people like, oh, hey, MLS, Pirlo. Like everybody, they like knew the league. They knew the play. They obviously, Insigne at Toronto. Like I had like proper conversations with random Italians on the street who knew about Major League Soccer. I'm like, bro, you know about Tam and Gam? This is crazy.
So, they definitely don't know Tam and Gam. But everything else, perfect.
So that was like impressive. But yeah, so when he went to, when Pulisic and Yunus Musa went to AC Milan, my first thought is like, oh, it's going to be a difficult environment. Are they going to be able to adapt? And the fact that they, you know, there's a chance for Pulisic and stuff like that is great. But seeing so the situation now, obviously AC Milan have a couple new players. Chukwueze is who came from what? He was in Germany. I don't remember where he was. Or was he at Valencia? I think he was in La Liga.
Yeah, Chukwueze was a last season signing. But Buongiorno. Oh, sorry, that's Napoli. They have a relatively static squad. I'd say. Not too many changes. You saw Morata come in, which was a new signing, which replaced Giroud.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a one-to-one, but Giroud is certainly more productive.
Okay.
And had been even for country. But Morata,
on the handsome charts, because both are obviously target nines. You could argue they're also tens, you know what I mean? but we all you know, kind of lose our breath over how gorgeous Giroud is, but Morata has to kind of be there.
Giroud is the great unifier. Okay, we can all opine on Giroud because nobody's going to disagree with you that he is the most handsome. Outside of that, I don't opine on looks. I feel like it's unprofessional.
Okay, I think it's unprofessional to do about female players, about male players.
All of them. Like, we can only talk about Giroud in world football in terms of how handsome he is. And of that, it's off limits. I don't touch it.
Okay, that's totally fair. I love the professionalism.
I have always rated Morata in terms of his productivity, despite the fact that, and he was at Juve for a spell. He was a contributor. People tend to, I feel like, hate on him just for fun. Or joke on the fact that he has a collection of offside goals. but outside of that, he usually comes in clutch when it matters. I think it was a good signing for Milan.
I have the same, parameters, but I will also add, do they give me butterflies? You know what I mean? Like, I think.
Are you doing like the heart? Are you doing heart hands for Morata? Or?
No, I'm just saying. It crossed my mind because I was like, oh, they replaced, very similar type of player, similar players, bringing Morata. And I'm like, you know what? But also.
Needed a solid target, man.
Also, pretty handsome as well. So I just want to, clap it up for the. And they're both gorgeous men. Good for them. Okay. But Pulisic played in this game, not on the wing. He played at the 10, right behind the striker,
Jovic.
Yeah. I gotta say, I am a Serie A expert now because I tuned in for the opening weekend, and Pulisic at the 10, not happy with it. I didn't appreciate it. We're looking at the FOTMOB rating. It says 6.7. It wasn't. What we saw last season of the decisiveness of, like, he's on the wing, he's gonna go at defenders 1v1. I think he got 13 goals or something like that.
Like that top line though last season, the chemistry there just from jump was undeniable with Giroud, with Leao, with Pulisic. Yeah. Even Loftus-Cheek got so involved in that attack. It was really, really just, it was beautiful. It was fun to watch.
Very.
I think it's going to take a little bit of time figuring this out.
But Pulisic at the 10 is like, even watching him in this game, I noticed moments of like, he has to think as a midfielder and he has to make decisions a little bit quicker. He has to make decisions that are not selfish. Obviously, he has to, who's he going to lay it off to? Who's he going to kind of build that? Where are his teammates going to be? And it just felt like it was, maybe it might just be this game. He might need some just time to adjust. It just felt like too much to do because he also was a part of the attack and took a couple shots and did have some decent chances. But I didn't really see any moments of him setting up other players, which is what he really is also going to be asked to do.
Yeah.
And I think it's a little too much for his, not necessarily his game, but like sort of where he is in his career. I don't think this is what he needs to prioritize. So I'm just, my main concern is like, I don't want him to be benched.
I don't think that's a possibility. I think that Paulo Fonseca right now is sort of tinkering with how and where personnel fit.
Yeah.
And I can understand putting Chukwueze in there. It was a question last season of where Pulisic would be playing in contrast to Chukwueze. There was a lot of argument that, oh, Chukwueze's coming in better form. That just wasn't the case. I think there were a lot of arguments just because Christian is Christian.
Yeah.
He can play on the left. He can play on the right. He can play in the 10 role. It's just a matter of what is optimal for this Milan side. I think this has just been a figuring out. I think that we probably will see Christian back out on the right flank. And I think he did a great job there last season.
Yeah.
I think it's just a matter of like who and where can support. And again, you need Loftus-Cheek to kind of get active.
I know he wants to probably play on the left side where Rafael Leão is, which he's not going to take that spot from him. But
he's been so good on the right. I think that
he is very good on the right.
For club, like it's not a question anymore. Like that right has been his.
Sure.
And I think that that's where he will ultimately end up.
But Leão, he had like two or three unbelievable chances in this game and did not put them away. So part of me, I'm like, poop, grab Pulisic there. Yeah. This is wild. They ended up tying the game, and I love that Yunus Musa got the game tying assist.
Musa, beautiful ball in. You saw Musa go missing a lot last season, and I feel like this is his time to step up.
Yeah, this is in a lot of the in the preseason, and I saw a lot of the. He wants to play more. I mean, it's going to be tough to get minutes in that midfield. That's mm-hmm. Decent. Yunus Musa also. I liked the way he played in this game because there was a real intention and aggressiveness, and we've seen Yunus Musa for a couple years with the U.S. and he's not. That's not his personality, right? He doesn't come off as a guy that's like, I'm not saying this in a negative way because I'm like, I also like seeing just nice people that are also professional footballers. That also makes me feel good.
How dare you be a good person?
But he just comes off as a genuine person. He talks about his religion and being Muslim and all these and everybody loves him and nobody has like a negative word to say. And then sometimes that attitude sometimes is like poo-pooed in sports of like, oh no, he's not willing to choke a guy.
Listen,
like
you don't
Mosqueda.
Have to be
willing
to choke. You could be the bad guy in right, play. Right. You don't need to go to those lengths. But yeah, maybe knuckle up sometimes. That'd be fine.
And I think we saw that in this game. So it was great. It was great to see. The other a couple other things in Serie A. So Napoli lost 3-0. To Verona?
They did, in fact, lose 3-0 to Verona.
And so now, obviously, Antonio Conte is the manager for Napoli. And he's just... All the comments about about just him working. Yeah, it's just like... I love it. It's just like your first day at work. And he's just like, hey, it's a nightmare over here. There were a few comments, a few quotes. Antonio Conte said, "Well, I expected a better situation." He also said, "To bring Napoli back to being competitive, it could take months, 6, 12, 2 years. I can't tell you," which is a great way to also be like, I think you're going to need me here for at least 2 years. You know what I mean? Like a little job security.
You're like that contract? Yeah, we're going to run that right through, my guy. You might want to re-up now.
Because it's a mess here. I got to fix everything the last guy did. And then he also said, quote, "I'm not saying we are at year zero, but we are very close to year zero." So this is like, he makes Napoli sound like an expansion MLS club, bro. This is so surreal. I was obviously paying attention to Napoli a lot the year they won the Scudetto.
Yeah.
How did we go? What's the main difference from that season to now?
Well, so last season they finished 10th, which is not great when you have in recent memory won the Scudetto.
Yeah.
They had a number of flubs in terms of just managerial appointments that did not help the situation. When you hire a Rudy Garcia, who's absolutely awful, and these were all things that De Laurentiis had sort of taken the blame for.
Okay.
He was trying to shield even like managerial shifts as they were happening. But ultimately, they were his decisions. They were bad decisions. Mm. He owned those bad decisions. But owning decisions doesn't change the state of your team. It doesn't change the personnel. There was this stalemate going into the season where it was like you're trying to offload Osimhen, who was really important to this squad. But they also had a bunch of personnel shifts just in players and otherwise. And then when you bring in Conte, who I think is a good appointment because you need a manager who is successful, who knows what they're doing. But with Conte, as we all know, he needs his tools to do his job correctly. And that means he needs the signings that he needs. He needs the personnel that can work within his system, and he needs the time to implement that system. So there's a number of things, admittedly, that you knew you were going to have these hiccups going in. Yeah. Now, with that having been said, you do not expect you do not expect Conte to come in match one against Verona and do this poorly.
Yeah.
This was just bad. The first half, not terrible. I'd say it was fairly okay. Kvaratskhelia getting injured, not great, especially in the first half. And then the second half, it just kind of, the wheels came off.
It makes me feel a little bit bad for Conte. It almost feels like, especially when he said, what was the first comment? He said, I expected a better situation. It feels a little bit like you meet somebody on a dating app and they don't look like their picture. You know what I mean? Like, there's how could he have not known what he was like walking into? It feels he talks like he was deceived. Like hearing these things after the first game of this, I mean, you would find out maybe like in the interview, maybe in the first few weeks of the job. Like it sounds like it's a frankly, it sounds like he's not going to be at Napoli very long. Like based on these comments, because it just sounds so. There's a vulnerability to it, but we're also not used to hearing him speak like this. Like it's so.
Conte is usually very like on the nose. He definitely isn't going to conceal his feelings, and I think that part of it is coming into a partnership like this, especially with someone like De Laurentiis.
Yeah, yeah.
There's an understanding.
Okay.
Right. So I feel like him coming in is and voicing his frustration this early, and I know that a lot of people are extremely critical of Conte, and you can be and should be. But I think that there probably was a expectation set that if you're going to use Conte, and it's not a secret, Conte needs what he needs to be good and expects his players to be what he needs to play.
Sure.
So I think he probably did have the expectation, and it probably was based in reality, or at least what he was told, that he would be able to bring in a number of players. Now, Napoli have always been very... I won't say stingy or cheap, but they are very conservative on the spending side. Yeah. And they had acknowledged like, trying to offload Osimhen has left like a bit of a block because you need those monies make significant changes.
And I think that's kind of the big issue overseeing. Even last season was sort of weird because there was like rumors that he was going to leave last season.
Right. And he did voice, Osimhen himself had said like, I want to go to Premier League.
Yeah.
And that's fine, right? Like there was the expectation that he would make his exit. I don't think there was the expectation that these monies would be hung up for as long as they had been. And I think that that probably is the root of some of this frustration at this point, because you didn't expect to be starting a new season in Serie A with your hands tied a bit.
Yeah. And it's like the also Osimhen was like reportedly Chelsea were like the main club that he was for like the last 2 years.
I mean, who didn't Chelsea go after?
I know, exactly.
Chelsea have their own problems where like they go out and pick up players like they're going to the grocery store and then they leave them on the shelf like they're broccoli. And you're like, I had no idea that this would have gone bad within months.
But it feels like, leaving one, bad situation to go to another.
Yeah, having been said, you still have a majority of this squad. Like you still have Cavada. You have Gio Simeone, who has been great for Napoli. Politano. You have Anguissa, Lobotka, Di Lorenzo. And there are some personnel shifts that need to happen to make this team better, because obviously 10th isn't adequate. But I think I blame a lot of the things that went wrong last season on just having two different managers in a season and then bringing in a third to try to kind of fix things. It just wasn't good.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's, when you hire one of your managers and they admittedly are like, I've never watched a minute of Serie A or this team play after you've already signed a contract. What is happening?
So you're like, telling me that I could have potentially worked for nothing?
Yeah, like I know that you joked, Christian, that you're a Serie A expert, but like, yeah, you probably get your badges. There's a chance.
Okay. The only other, I want to just mention this. Well, moving off of Serie A real quick, but Bundesliga will be starting next week. But they had their Super Cup, which is obviously the Bundesliga winner versus the DFB Pokal winner. Second place. Okay, got it. Right. So they played Stuttgart in the Super Cup, and the interesting thing here, we all saw Leverkusen last year. Leverkusen. They went just undefeated. They only lost one game in the season, and that was at in the conference, the Europa League final.
Yeah.
Right. So that was the only game that they lost. It was just surreal. Xabi Alonso is an unbelievable manager that he's able to do this. But in this game, you sort of beginning of a new season, you're like, okay, it can't happen again. How many? There was something like 12 or 13 games where they were like in losing positions and they ended up tying or winning in the either stoppage time or just late in games or like after the 90th minute. It was. Just unbelievable that they kept doing it over and over and over. When at that point you start tuning in to Leverkusen like the way if you were watching baseball and you hear that there's a perfect game going into the seventh inning, you're like, okay, well, I gotta watch. So it's like now.
Xabi Alonso literally caught lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
It's you have to be drawn into that. How could you not?
Exactly. But in this game against Stuttgart, the same exact thing happened. They were winning the game. Then Stuttgart tied it. Then Leverkusen get a red card in the 37th minute. So you're like, okay, that's it. Back to reality. The story's gonna get back to normal. They're not gonna do this again. They end up giving up the lead. They tie the game in the 88th minute and then win in penalties. I don't know how coaches can do that. They can get their players to get on just another level. The level of commitment and passion that they have for their manager. Because at some point, when you get a red card, you're like, oh boy. Like, you feel it. You're like, oh, I'm going to have to run all day.
Usually when you get a red card and you're down a player, you switch to play more defensively.
Yeah.
And there's not much else going on, right? You're more worried and hyper aware of what's going to happen. So it makes it harder for another team to score another goal. But to that end, like when you're down, you still need to get some semblance of an attack in. What I will say is like, I think it is a very rare manager indeed that can get a team to keep it together, to play for them. Those are the one of a kind managers. Those are the ones that actually go down in history. But especially for Xabi Alonso, who's such a young manager, to have accomplished what he has.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It is like so remarkable when you watch them play. There's players in other leagues and other that are much more technical and whatever. But there's just there's a beauty to the way Leverkusen play, they were better with 10 men. They have a different engine.
That's such a crazy phenomenon in football too. It's like when you know you're playing down a player, you will play some of your most remarkable football.
Yeah.
Because you're so worried that you have to overcompensate. So yeah, it's doable. But also having that connection to your manager where you are going to always stay locked in for them.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's just so they win another trophy. In very, very dramatic fashion. And, Bundesliga has taken up a lot more of my football diet. And Serie A is trying to bump in and get in
you,
there
you
a little
mean,
bit.
The pasta and the meatballs. Come on.
So it's this is what I say. I'm like, this is what I say. I'm like, it's, you know, sometimes you know, like we had a conversation about during the Olympics about it. We were talking about Spain and how many players we recognize and mm-hmm. how players in there. I'm like, I don't barely know some of these guys. It's like La Liga.
You're like, where'd that guy come from? Is he new? You're like, Christian, he's been playing in La Liga for like 23 years. And you're like, yeah.
La Liga is like the one right now that is on the bottom.
The back burner.
Yeah.
I can understand it.
It's hard to incorporate all of them. So sometimes people were like, you don't know who that guy is and whatever. And I'm like, bro, I'm trying my best here. I'm not mad at you for not knowing who's playing in the League Cup semifinal, bro, because that's my wheelhouse. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
But I get it.
Congrats to Leverkusen. All right. And speaking of League Cup and a couple other American leagues, we're going to get to that right after this. Let's go, America. All right, let's talk about some leagues in the United States. A couple. Let's start with women's soccer because the USL Super League started.
They did
this weekend. So, if anybody's not aware, it is a new Division One women's league. So, at first, it felt like, oh, okay, why are you bringing a competitor to NWSL? That is our Division One women's league, and the Super League. To me, at least, solves a few problems, which is that there's not enough teams, there's too many players, and there are players good enough to be in the league that are not, because there's just not enough.
Yeah, I mean, as much as there's expansion, mm-hmm. First of all, more women's soccer is a great thing.
Of course.
In any capacity. So, yeah, USL kicking off this weekend with flair. They had some paratroopers, they had boats, they had everything, action-packed.
Yeah, and it was Tampa Bay, you know, they had their game. And, you know, our friend Christina Uncle is one of the owners of the team.
And president.
And president, yeah. And, you know, I interviewed her at TST because Tampa Bay Sun had a team playing at TST. And so there's definitely a lot of, like, you know, for personal reasons, I'm like, I want this to go well. Yeah. I want it to succeed, especially for friends that I have that are working for the league and with the league. I think it's like we all have to sort of adjust because our brains are used to there's only one Division One, and that is the main one, and that's why everybody's trying to sort of get to. So I'm curious what this how this will shape. Women's soccer, just like
I don't know so much about the shaping of it, but I think it speaks to the overall growth and investment in women's soccer, especially in the US.
Yeah,
because obviously there's competing leagues globally, there's different divisions that exist even in England, in France, in Italy, which only recently have been acknowledged in the last couple of years as professional athletes. In Serie A Femminile.
Sure, sure.
And a lot of that came from other independent semi-pro leagues that, you know, bigger clubs, especially on the men's side, have bought into and sort of, you know, relabeled and been like, this is our team. Right. Welcome to...
What did you think of... this is completely off topic.
It's okay.
What did you think of... was it Douglas Luiz and Alicia Lehman? The couple who were both playing for West Ham in the Premier League at NWSL, who both transferred to Juventus and the Juventus women's team and it's like the first couple transfer, I think, in history. Is that what they've said? I don't know if it's the first.
I mean, in world sports, in terms of coupling.
No. I guess in football, it sort of seems like I don't remember ever seeing something like this. But this is like
maybe for heterosexual couples. But been routinely happening within women's soccer for quite some time. Sure. I don't really like to delve into their personal relationships.
Right. No.
But coming as a package deal to the same clubs isn't new.
Okay.
I think it's just probably more atypical for. Heterosexual couples, and so that's why it's making a big splash. Where it's like,
goodness! I think it's fun. It's like one of those things of like, you know, the brand. This is the brand. It's a package deal. You got to take both.
I think that it's probably new on that front where people are not used to seeing it, but otherwise, it's been happening.
Yeah. And both good players. I mean, people, you know, especially in comment sections when this happened, it was just like You know, sometimes people are pretty critical of Alicia Lehman, but she's played in WSL for a long time, and arguably she's going to a weaker league. So I think she arguably right. So I think she'll be fine. But also, in if we want to be as vain as possible, she is one of the most followed, most popular people on Instagram, on the internet. You guys not that mad that they're like, okay, yes, we will take one of the most popular people on the internet to help grow our brand.
In the same vein, they did sign Ronaldo and experienced that growth.
Exactly. Okay.
The bump.
So a couple of things. All right. Right now is Summer Cup over, right?
Are we? So Summer Cup is on hiatus.
Yes, until
October.
Until the final or semifinal or whatever.
Which will be in October.
Okay.
NWSL will be back this weekend.
Yes.
Which is exciting. They have 10 more weeks of that season to go.
I'll be honest. There's a little bit of, I'm like jonesing for some NWSL.
As you should be.
Yeah.
We have the Kansas City Current and Orlando Pride rematch that should be absolutely exciting. Kansas City have gotten some reinforcement signings, which should be fairly insane coming up against Orlando Pride side, which have been firing on all pistons. They'll have Banda back. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
We haven't spoken since for a while, but obviously the U.S. winning in the Olympics. What's your now looking back on it a couple of weeks? How do you feel about how that whole
all
tournament
of the fanfare?
Went?
The Olympics went better than anyone could have possibly.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't really know what you were going to get. Emma Hayes in the driver's seat for fewer than 90 days, which usually you say like between 60 and 90 days, you usually can see like what the trajectory is.
Antonio Conte is like, how'd you do it?
He needs to call Emma Hayes and be like, excuse me, scusa. Figure out what's going on there, maybe, you know. But no, she really managed to get every last bit of enthusiasm, passion, technicality, and otherwise out of every single one of these players. Was criticized heavily for her lack of rotation.
Myself included.
Yeah, she, I mean, I was less so because I could understand what she was trying to do. And it's, you know, like you get teams together and you see what they're capable of doing. And I understand the emphasis on suffering. Some suffering is good. Mm-hmm. It yielded a lot of bond, chemistry, anticipation. It also taught them what they can work through and how to, right? Like it just sort of emphasizes your mental toughness.
Yeah.
And with the way that the Olympics went, you know, you had a lot of like 90 plus minutes, plus extra time, plus pens. And that's a lot to work through in such a condensed schedule. I think that the U.S. side has come out of it better for it. And the crazy part is this team, on average, is so much younger than what we've gone to big tournaments with. And that means that we are nowhere near seeing their ceiling yet.
Yeah.
And their peak performance.
Yeah.
The combination of like Mal Swanson,
Trinity,
Sophia Smith.
Triple Espresso. You happy with the name that they've gone with?
Listen, if they're happy, I'm happy. I think there were better names, but you know what? Like, have at it, ladies. Like, keep performing, whatever it takes. But yeah, just the combination of this team together, seeing what works, what doesn't work, and, you know, the learnings that they had going through this tournament were phenomenal.
All right. So NWSL comes back this weekend. You mentioned there are 10 weeks left. Can we give any kind of predictions? Can anybody surprise? Because Orlando and Kansas City have been just so unbelievably consistent.
And so
that's been like great to see, especially Orlando. The Pride have just been years of just like, when are they going to figure it out? And they have clearly figured it out. And having Barbara Banda helps quite a bit.
Cheat code. Yeah. I mean, that's not to say that Kansas City aren't absolutely insane. They have the most goal scorers on their team. They are extremely productive. Vlatko has an outstanding product with that. And just also like them opening the stadium this season.
Yeah.
It's a great story. So they're firing all pistons. Washington Spirit making recent signings. They just picked up Lacey Santos.
Yes.
She made her debut
Colombian,
in the friendly.
Right?
Colombian, friendly. She's back from Olympic duty. Mm-hmm. And also I mean, Chicago Red Stars have some tinkering to do. They haven't really formed an identity yet. But they did just pick up Ludmila from Brazil. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that goes. North Carolina Courage have sort of come into their own. They also have their reinforcement signings. They looked really good in Summer Cup. So I feel like coming into back into season this upcoming weekend, I would keep an eye on them. Oh. Portland under Rob Gale, also phenomenal storyline.
Okay.
I feel like they're great. Other teams right Rob, now that are...
So the coach for Orlando is... I've seen interviews and stuff with him. He's just like a great personality, great guy. He just like seems like a... He seems like a fun young dad. That's like the energy that he sort of... I don't know his story. You mentioned the storyline, but I don't know it. I just seen
fun
a couple
young
interviews.
Young dad
it's just
is
like,
hilarious.
Man, he's like a cool...
No, he is. He's, like, he's a younger manager.
Yeah,
coach.
Yeah.
He really... I mean, they have little Brazil over there.
Right,
so.
Right.
It's a lot of fun.
So the one team, I watch a lot more Gotham games than probably any other team.
And they're a good team to watch.
They are a good team to watch. But I think I want to just say, as far as any sort of surprises, obviously they won last season and that was remarkable. And speaking of the storyline, yeah.
What, last to first, that whole trajectory? Yeah. they love the suffering.
But this season, they've arguably been much more consistent with, speaking of like players, I never heard of, there's like players that come off the bench or just, last season, the goal that Katie Stengel scored against the Thorns away in the playoffs was just like, where did this come from and all this and then was it Ella Stevens?
Yep. Stevens is on fire.
I forgot what club she came from beforehand. I don't know if it was Kansas City, don't remember offhand, but where did this come from? Like
they had a really slow, wonky start to the season.
Uh-huh.
They weren't scoring many goals. They still were among the best defenses in the league, and I'd still say they are. Coach Juan Colors Omaros, like, amazing. Does a great job with them in the, like, stay ready, versatility, I'd say. Like, he's very good at figuring out where a player is really good at and sure. can also play. So I think that that's one of the strengths that Gotham have. And then the productivity, it started to come.
Well,
so, he was pleased with the chances that were created, even though the goals weren't there yet. And the goals started to come. And
sure.
Ella Stevens has been a standout. I don't want to pull a stat from my head. I feel like she's got 5 goals already this season.
Sure,
she
confirm.
Could have more at this point. But I just remember him.
Yeah,
there we go.
Goals, yeah.
5 goals, 3 assists. She's been great. And I remember when she joined the squad that Coach Amaros had said, Ella has a different skill set, but she is a Gotham-style player. And that was ahead of any of her goal-scoring abilities.
Yeah.
So I feel like now I'm going to be extra keen to listen in how he describes a player. But yeah, he's got a bulk of Olympians on that squad. He's got
talent. I thought they were not going to do well in the Summer Cup. And it's just like, because they're missing so many superstars.
So much depth. And the thing is, they have so much depth and you don't actually get to see all of it because you have the starters, but
yeah.
The plug and play of everything, like Delaney Sheehan, Yasmin Ryan, like they're so good.
And they lost
so
Midge Purse to injury.
They lost Midge to injury. And then you still have Lynn Williams,
know?
Ann Katrin Berger as a keeper is one of the best, if not the best in the league outside of, oh my God, I'm drawing a blank right now. Outside of anyone, I need a nap.
Outside of somebody else who's also good. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's just, it's remarkable that given, even without the players that they, that are the Olympians and to still not look that uncomfortable and stuff like that, it's really, really impressive.
Yeah.
So imagine when all these players are back. So I think Gotham could make another real case and real push for another title. It's not impossible.
Oh, for sure. I mean, when you consider what they're capable of, the depth that they have, they are certainly among KC or in Orlando.
Without a doubt. Okay. All right. Let's wrap here. We have this is gonna be a delight because we're gonna end today's show. And if you're just listening to today's show, make sure you go to our YouTube and make sure you watch these final moments because there was a clip that is circulating that's being streamed on the internet because there's a red card that was given in a league in Peru. that I am not familiar. What I don't know if this might be semi-professional. I don't know if this, I have no idea, but the broadcast looks pretty legit. So I'm assuming it's a proper league in Peru. But this is, let's go to this because this is, I've never seen a red card issued for this reason in my life. And we'll just look at it and then we'll react to it.
Resentido Lucho Ruiz. Y allá vemos al jugador, le dio ganas de orinar. De aguajón, señor.
And there it is. My man is getting issued. He's being sent off because...
This is so insane.
Because he is...
He's like, I got to take a little tinkle before I take my corner.
So just a preface, so if anybody, people listening. So there's an injury that, and the medical staff is checking on, I believe, either the goalkeeper or somebody that's inside the goal. Camera pans to the guy who's about to take a corner and he is pissing at what appears to be a construction site. So I don't know how, again, I don't know what league this is.
Yeah, that's definitely a cement mixer.
It's a cement mixer. Right? So it's Cantorcillo against Atlético Aguayun. I'm assuming that's what the A stands for. And my man is like, yo, this is going to, how long is this gonna take? I'm trying to get the ball back in play. Well, while he is receiving medical attention, I'm just gonna take a little whiz, a little wee wee, and that's exactly what happened. Also, when we look at it's also the medical team, the lady who appears to be on the medical, is just wearing jeans. She's just wearing
jeans and a t-shirt.
jeans and a nice blouse. You know what I mean? So there's a little bit of like, okay, what level of degree?
This is so chaotic. And honestly, this just brings back one very distinct memory that just like leapt probably into my frontal lobe here. But we had to remove a guy from a pickup game once. He was absolutely plastered drunk, but he decided to take a wee break in a corner. Like that would be totally chill.
Wow.
And this was in Brooklyn, which is even weirder. But I did used to jump in sometimes for like the servers games. So like,
okay,
they would get a little lit at work and then like pull up to play, which is fine.
Yeah.
I like to think that I was just better than all of them. It could have just been that they all had like way too many drinks before they showed up. But yeah, we had to kick that guy out and ask him to never come back.
That makes sense. I would imagine you get red carded for, you know, pissing in the middle of a game. That's makes total sense. I mean, it's also...
What if he really had to go?
I understand if you really have to go, but this is... I've heard this in like NFL because there's so much equipment and so, and the guys are like, yeah, you just go. You just go right on yourself.
As a runner, or I'll say a retired runner because it's... not running distances.
I don't know what
anymore.
You're about to say, but I gotta hit this button.
Like sometimes, sometimes you just go.
You
can't find a spot.
It happens from time to time.
Listen, marathons and ultras are long. Sometimes it's raining and it's less noticeable.
It's not worth a red. I mean,
No, absolutely not.
Your
I
commitment
can't imagine
to your team also includes your. Your bladder control.
Yes.
Okay. And
like, why didn't you go before the game? This is very like talking to your toddler.
And there's also something there've been times when I was like late to a game and I desperately had to pee. But then as soon as you get there, there's something
you forget.
The adrenaline, something your body says like, hey, you're good. I got you. All right. I'll hold this for later. Cause I know you got an important, you know.
Yeah. Your body
important
knows.
90 like, minutes.
Listen, bladder, there's an urgent goal I have to score. This match starts in like 3 minutes. Yeah. I gotta hop on.
Your bladder's like, oh, you got Holland today? You gotta play against Holland? I got you, okay? So this is crazy that this dude had to pee on a game that is also recorded and televised. Look, there's graphics
what, but also,
on the
like,
screen.
Can we talk about the cameraman panning to the corner?
The
like, he knew. He knew. He was like, hey, yeah, this guy down in the goal getting tended to that needs medical help. But also, you know, he saw that and said, let me just shimmy this camera.
I just want to play this again because we didn't really mention the broadcast. The broadcast is speaking in Spanish. And he says that the guy is peeing. So it's
oh my God.
I'll try to translate it.
Okay, so between
Lucho Ruiz,
Lucho Ruiz.
Al jugador le dio ganas de orinar. De aguajón, señor.
So he said, le dio ganas de orinar, which means he had the urge to piss. Uh-huh. So then even the announcers, like, you know how a lot of times announcers have to use like euphemisms and they have to find ways to like, no, we can't say it. Nah, not this announcer. He's just like, bro, homie's taking a piss right there in the corner. Ref, can you see it? You know what I mean? This is surreal that this happened at a game of this level. I understand playing against a couple bartenders, but this is unbelievable. I cannot believe this happened.
And also just like commentary gold. Like this is automatic sports Emmy.
Yeah.
Few commentators would have dove on that, but also we have to like shout to like Witty who for that iconic
Yes.
This hit him in the penis.
Yes, that's right. Which is where do we got that one?
Right. And we still have it on deck.
We got, I mean, it's already, I might have to add the Le Dios Ganas de Orinar. I might have to add it to the board because we found a new, he hit him in the penis. Okay?
Iconic moments in commentary. I'm not a commentator, but I commend everyone, especially Witty, for that bit of history there.
Classic, bro. But yeah, my man got the red. I saw somebody commented when he got the red card. They said, how was that not a yellow? Meaning,
oh no!
Which is a great joke. I love it. I love it. Huge fan. All right, let's wrap up today. Thank you everybody for tuning in. Per usual, make sure you go follow Christine Cupo on Instagram and Twitter. C Cupo on Twitter. Miss Cupo on Instagram.
Indeed.
So go and watch her on Attacking Third.
Yeah, Attacking Third, Mondays and Thursdays, folks. Tune in on Galazzo Network.
Let's go. All right. Make sure you follow us at Soccer Cooligans on all socials. Subscribe. Hit the subscribe button for more pee-pee talk because that's what we bring here. I don't know. Attacking Third ain't talking about it. I'll tell you that much. So come and tune in. We'll be back on Thursday. Alexis will be back. And appreciate y'all. Thank you so much for tuning in. See you Thursday. Peace.